AM 1270, Catholic Radio Charlotte, on the Carolina Catholic Radio Network. Download our new mobile app at carolinacatholicradio.org.
Well, when you hear the sound of this music, you know what that means. It's Faith and Sport Time on the Carolina Catholic Radio Network. We're also streaming at carolinacatholicradio.org and on the Carolina Catholic Radio app. We're also broadcasting across Radio Maria, so welcome all of our Radio Maria listeners. I'm Chris, the producer of the show, and now coming to you each week as your host for Faith and Sport, the one, the only, Dr. John Acquaviva.
Hey, folks, welcome to the show, however, wherever you're listening. We're so glad you joined us today here on Carolina Catholic Radio and a co-production of Radio Maria. Thank you. This is Christmas week.
That's right.
It's Christmas week, right? There's Chris Pressler, and then there's Christmas, yes. Our Lord.
But remember, no Xmas.
That's right. There's no Xmas. Don't do that, people, ever. Folks, here's what we're going to do today here on Faith and Sport. This is where we merge sport and virtue. It's a sports show, but we like to merge, you know, morality, ethics, and character into our conversation. We're going to discuss all things sports, including our hit and miss with Carlos Herrera, as we do just about every week. He's going to join us again this week. We're going to do weekend headlines. Our guest today is Anson Dorrance, a longtime women's soccer coach at University of North Carolina in Chapel Hill and multiple-time national champion.
Wow.
Yeah, and then we're going to do the quick Q&A with Dr. A. Now, I know it says multiple-time champion. Multiple, of course, is anything over one. But here's the amazing thing, folks. This guy has won a national title as the coach of UNC women's soccer 21 times. I know. We bow to just the name of Nick Saban because he's won like five, right? This guy's won 21 national titles. Anyway, he's going to join us in the second half of our show. Chris, how was your weekend, brother?
Great weekend, especially sports-wise. I was really happy with the Wolfpack. I had a great win over Campbell University over the weekend.
And a Division III school.
That's right. Yeah. And then just heard that the Wolfpack football team going to the Gator Bowl January 2nd.
Perfect, brother.
Only team that let me down was my Washington football team against the Seattle Seahawks.
I know you try to get sympathy or empathy from Carlos, our guest that's going to join us here in a second, but he doesn't really offer much, does he?
We're going to lose anyway.
We're going to lose anyway. I know, but remember, he's a hardened guy. It's different down here, but when you're in the D.C. area, it's a little different, brother. You get inundated with it just so often, right? I remember one time, I think it was the day that President Reagan got shot, like 40 years ago. No kidding. I think the lead story was a preseason game that the Washington Redskins played. And they go, President Reagan was shot today, too.
Yeah.
I'm telling you, it's so big up there. It's crazy.
Yeah.
Folks, thank you for joining us here on Faith and Sport. This is where we apply our faith to all aspects of sports. So whether you're a coach, an athlete, a parent of an athlete, a grandparent of an athlete, an administrator, a referee, this show is for you. We like to say we look at sport through the Catholic lens. Listen, we talked about Carlos being on the show with the hit and miss. Let's bring him on right now. He looks ready to go. Carlitos Herrera.
Carlitos!
Welcome back to the show, buddy.
I'm excited to be back. Thank you very much. Dr. Acquaviva, I'd like to wish everybody who's a listener happy preparation for Christmas
Day. There you go.
Very excited about this beautiful time of year.
Carlos, I actually didn't know this question. My wife turns to me because she's a convert, right? So she turns to me for like what I would call Catholic trivia. In other words, like these things that maybe only a cradle Catholic would know. And she said, when exactly does Advent end? And I had to hesitate on that one, and I wasn't quite sure. Does it end the day before Christmas? Does it end after the fourth Sunday of Advent? And I think that's the case. And then this is Christmas week, but I'm not sure. What do you say?
That's a great question, being a cradle Catholic and being a youth minister. I used to probably know this answer, but I would venture to say that I believe it's on Christmas Day because that's when actually Christmas starts.
Got it.
And that's why the pink candle isn't necessarily done the week of Christmas. It's done sometimes the week before Christmas, like the Sunday before the Sunday of Christmas.
It's the third week of Advent, and then the fourth week is back to the purple candle. So I know
I think is what's done this Sunday.
I will reference
that for our listeners so that we can back up our claims of being about faith and sport.
That's right.
Not just about sport.
Maybe Chris can earn his money this hour and he can actually look it up while you and I are talking. When does Catholic Advent end and Christmas start? Carlos, right now there are probably thousands of listeners that have their palm on their forehead going, and they gave these guys a radio show on Catholic. Listen, folks, go ahead.
We mirror our Catholic lives. It's not about perfection.
That's right. We're demonstrating, you and I, yet again, that we are not perfect, but we are aiming for perfection.
That's right.
Carlos, we have so many
come when we are dead.
That's
my friend,
that's right. That's when there will be actually peace in our hearts completely. Onto a much lighter note, let's talk about faith in sport, and in particular what's going on in the world of sport. As always, we do our hit or miss of the week, and anybody who's just joining us for the first time, Carlos joins us just about each and every week. He's up in the Northern Virginia area. He's a longtime friend of mine. He's a certified soccer coach, but he's also a former youth director, youth minister up in the Northern Virginia area, and we talk about the hit or miss of the week, and what that means is something that's good or bad that happened in the world of sport that we think we should bring to your attention, or if it's already at your attention or to your attention, we just want to kind of like magnify it and talk about some specific aspects of it. I have a great one today. I can't wait to get to it. But as always, I defer to you, brother. Do you have a hit or miss in the world of sport?
Well, you know, like many of mine, it depends on where you sit on this. And I think it's worth a conversation and talking about. And that is it wrong or right,
mm-hmm.
in the grand scheme of things? Because I think this has happened with youth sports as well. If losing to have some sort of advantage, where you could actually, when given the opportunity to win a game, is losing a game for whatever reasons, could be tactical, could be a better seed, could be a better team you're going to play.
That's right.
Could be for a draft pick. Is it good to lose for that kind of strategic advantage, or you're essentially should be playing every game to win? Who benefits from that? Who doesn't benefit from that? What kind of message does that send to players? We know players and fans and front office all see things in a different way. And the specific reason I bring this up is there was a lot of clamoring yesterday because the Jets won a game.
That's
and
right.
They for one, went from being a team, the only team with no wins.
That's right.
To being now a team with one win. So they won't go down in history as an 0-16
That's right.
team. And so they were able to get out of that. But it cost them a position on the draft from being first in the draft with Jacksonville, who now moved up. They're also a one-win team. But for whatever reason, I don't know if it's win percentage or score percentage or who they played, but Jacksonville now becomes the first seed, and they're likely to get the quarterback that is a very stellar quarterback in Trevor Lawrence.
That's
so
right.
So the question to you and to our fans is, you know, what's the morality of winning or losing on purpose?
No, there's definitely – is it a moral issue? That's a discussable point. That's an arguable point for sure, but – it's definitely an ethics issue. In fact, it's so much an issue that the NBA has tried to put in, and they have instilled, I should say, procedures that try to keep the basketball teams from losing. And one of them is, it used to be if you finished last in the league that you would get the number one pick. But what they do now, you know, this has been for several years now, you get so many balls within the lottery pot, basically. So in other words, it's the first, let's say, eight teams that are in there, and this is the way they used to do it. And if you came in last, you wouldn't necessarily get automatically the first pick, but you would get the most balls in that, like, bingo lottery thing. And this little device where balls would come out, and then they would select it. And so your team would have the name on it. You wouldn't necessarily – get the first pick automatically, but you would just have the best chance to do that. And that was one of them. But the other one is they can't claim injury when there's no injury. They wanted to modify that a little better. They had something about so many players had to play the game and so forth. And I forgot what some of those new rules are, but certainly the NBA is well aware of that, and they're frustrated by teams toward the end of the year just tanking, and they just vie for that top pick. But you know, it's one of the things that's interesting, Carlos, that doesn't exist in major American sport, but it is really common in sports that are dear to you and I, and that is rugby and soccer in Europe, and I think outside of Europe as well, is they have what's called relegation, right?
Yes, yes.
And do you know what this means, Carlos?
Well, the relegation?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, this is where
I like it.
Yeah, and I think it's a really good idea.
It basically means you get sent to a lower level of competition, but
That's
it's
right.
also a lower level of financial remuneration.
That's right.
For the year.
And right.
you know, there's a variety of costs associated with it to the team. So no team wants to get relegated.
No, in fact it's a really big deal. And I remember, you know, when I was playing rugby for Roanoke, we were in the lower division. We were in Division II in our league in the state of Virginia. And there was a relegation match. So whoever finished last in the league above you and the team that finished first, there wasn't an automatic shift. In other words, we weren't automatically vaulted to that next league. You played each other. I want to say that doesn't happen, though, in European soccer, in rugby, and outside of Europe. I think it's if you finish last in that league, the next league down, whoever finishes first, they get moved up. And you're right, it's not just an issue of pride, it's an issue of great financial costs that come to it. But of course, there's nothing like that in our culture of sport here in America.
Not yet.
Yeah,
they're talking about it for soccer. But let's go back to the question that we posed, right?
That's so right.
If it is in the benefit of a long-term benefit for the team to get the first selection in the draft,
yep.
then you would think that everybody in the front office would say to the coaches and the team members, listen, we don't want to win any games, so let's just get the first, you know, pick in the draft and, you know, hoping that that player will be the player that makes a huge difference moving forward. I think a lot of fans would like to see that. So tell me, How would that be a good strategy? Is there some negatives to that?
Negatives in particular to what? Having a strategy to lose.
If the front office says to the coach and the players, you know, I think it's best that we don't try to win.
Yeah.
Is that reasonable? Is that likely? Is that good?
My guess is, well, first of all, I don't think it's not good for this reason. The people who are playing the game, right, the players themselves, they – generally, in fact, I would say it's rare that they would have any feeling other than for that upcoming game or that current game to try to win the game. And that's for a couple reasons. First of all, most players, especially because the span of a career in the NFL is less than 4 years. And for some positions, it's less than 3 years. That means they don't get a chance to play very often. If they play poorly, even for one or two games, and let's say, to your argument, trying to lose the game for the administration or for the organization itself, that means they have sacrificed themselves at the peril of this particular issue. And I don't think they would do that. I think that's one of the reasons why you're going to get good games in the NFL, for instance, right until the end, because these guys are fighting for a position in the next year. And especially if that team's bad, they're fighting even harder because that team is going to be even more trigger happy to make a change at the end of the year and in the off season. I think the people that actually want to have this happen are the administration, right? The organization itself, the GM, the president, the owner of the team and so forth. I think they, when, you know, microphones are turned off and TV cameras are turned off, I think they wish that happens. The other thing is, I think the fans want it as well. I think they're looking in the long term. They're like, what? How does it help us to be 2-14 versus 0-16? Just lose all the games and let's get that Trevor Lawrence, whoever that top guy is, out of college. but it's the players themselves. And the other thing, Carlos, and you and I know this being longtime athletes, you want to win. Whenever you put on a uniform, you play to win the game. And that is...
Absolutely, 100%. You play to win. I think that's a natural instinct for a coach, for players. And, you know, I think it doesn't matter. I don't think they play for necessarily the 10-year aspect of the team or the franchise. They're playing for their own pride, and I think that's what usually happens.
Yeah. Yeah, so this is an interesting point, but it's a great time to talk about it because the team that had a chance to go 0-16 for the first time, I can't quite remember. I think it was the Detroit Lions. In fact, I should know this, but it's something I tend to want to forget. They were the last team to go 0-16, and I want to say it was around, I don't know, 5 or 6 years ago now that they did that. So they're certainly not, wouldn't be the only team in history, the New York Jets, to do that. But now they've kind of removed themselves from that possibility because they won this past weekend. And a side note to the whole thing, they had the number 32 offense. And of 32 teams, they're ranked the worst offense in the National Football League. And here was the irony, Carlos. The L.A. Rams, the team they beat, had the number one rated defense. And yet,
wow.
Yeah, and yet they won. And that this shows, really, Carlos, as much as anything, why trying to make a living off gambling is so difficult. Like, if you were to just look at that stat, right?
Yes, you're absolutely.
You just look at this. Oh, this team's winless. They're 32nd in offense. The team they're playing is first in defense. And the Jets just ran right on by them because they're professional athletes.
Right. And the other thing is, you think, and this goes more to, if you want to talk about human nature on this show, you talk about a team like the Rams, you could just look at the record and go, we're going to steamroll these guys.
That's
these
right.
guys are 0 something.
That's
they're,
right.
They're not. We're not. We're going to crush them. And they, you know, the players probably don't mail it in on that week and then don't practice this hard and don't focus as hard. Next thing you know, the Jets steamroll because they – I wouldn't want to be on a team that was 0-16. I mean, that
no,
to me would
no,
be an embarrassment.
That's
you
right.
Know, I don't care whether you have a pick. I don't want to be that record
that's
team
right.
that since 19-whatever is now 0-something.
That's right.
So it's kind of a trap game, as they call it.
That's right. That's right. Yeah, I think we posed more questions than we answered, but still good stuff to chat about. Folks, you're listening to Faith and Sport here on Carolina Catholic Radio as well as Radio Maria. I want to thank all our Radio Maria and Carolina Catholic Radio supporters and listeners of the show and of the stations themselves. Thank you for joining us today here on Faith and Sport. We're joined by Carlos Herrera. We're talking about our hit and miss for the week. Carlos had a, I think it was considered a miss, correct, Carlos?
Well, yeah, either way. It's a win for the players. It's a miss for the fans.
Yeah, you're right. That's a good way to put it. Mine is an absolute and total miss. And mine has to do with Major League Baseball players, or Major League Baseball, I should say. And the miss goes to the league, Major League Baseball. And it's because they accepted recently the stats of the Negro Leagues to be absorbed into the overall all-time stats of Major League Baseball. Now, this was clearly a gesture of, I think, if nothing else, it was a gesture of to demonstrate their sorrow for the injustice, for holding back, accepting Negro players into the, or from Negro baseball leagues, I should say, Black African-American baseball players into Major League Baseball, of course, until 1947 when Jackie Robinson broke the color barrier. And even then, there were several teams that took years to adopt that philosophy and accept a African-American player. But this is a miss for so many reasons, primarily because they were two different leagues. And all they have done is created this gesture that is borderline embarrassing for all involved because they are not the same. They weren't equivalent. They didn't have the same. Not only were they not the same players, but everybody believes that the overall quality of each league was not the same. This would be equivalent, folks. Anybody who knows this, for the USFL, that other pro football league back in the 80s, or the XFL in the last couple years. By the way, the XFL is going to restart, I think, again next year. It'd be like the NFL adopting those stats. It doesn't really make any sense. And this comes from African-American ESPN writer Howard Bryant. I think it's really interesting because he ultimately just uses this platform to kind of berate MLB and just say, it's embarrassing what you did to the black players, and this is just a mere gesture that doesn't really mean anything. And I agree with him on that standpoint, and he just took it as an avenue and an opportunity to talk about basically something that MLB can't ultimately rectify, and that is the segregation that took place until 1947 and for many teams thereafter. But I'm going to read this directly from his article in the last few days. He said, MLB's news release referred to the decision as a, quote, correcting an oversight. But the Negro Leagues were not the result of an oversight, and to frame their exclusion as such is a stunning offensive. It was a deliberate system. The major leagues destroyed a half century of black baseball history and baseball history in general with one unrelenting purpose in mind, to do their part in reinforcing black inferiority to the rest of the country. But further, here's one of the reasons why. Okay, that's well stated, and I understand where he's coming from on that. But talking about why this is a miss for me. Listen, this is really interesting coming directly from Jackie Robinson. Let's see if I can find this part in the article. The point here is this, that not only were the Negro Leagues thought to be inferior to Major League Baseball, but listen to this. This is directly from this writer, Howard Bryant. The poor scheduling and record-keeping, unreliable data, and inferior conditions are not the fault of the black players. Indeed, no one over the past half century has questioned their ability. In addition to their exclusion from playing against their white peers, the totality of conditions stands as embarrassing testimony to what the major league players forced black players to endure. Now, here's the thing. Jackie Robinson even said himself he was offended by the very existence of the Negro Leagues because of their necessity and because of the scheduling was so irregular. And he even said it was difficult to determine which games in which he was playing, Carlos, were either official games or which ones were exhibitions. He couldn't accurately calculate his batting average. And the point here is, if a guy playing doesn't know whether the actual game is an official game or an exhibition, that takes something away from it right there. And he wasn't overly critical of the Negro Leagues. He was just basically making a statement. I said a whole lot there, Carlos. I didn't give you a chance to respond to that. But what's the first thing that comes to your mind as I read all that stuff?
Well, I mean, obviously, what happened then, and I think everybody understands this and knows this and can admit this, you know, the segregation of black individuals apart from white teams and white society was wrong, right? Should never have been done. You know, it was done. It's also part of human nature that we do a lot of things that are wrong as individuals and as societies as well. And we come back, and as we grow, we learn that that was not good. I was just a little distraught by the fact, and I would agree with the writer on the fact that MLB's news release, all they could come up with was correcting an oversight, to be quoted, what the author quoted. I mean, that seems like either they didn't spend a whole lot of time trying to figure out how to, you know, present this, because that to me would be very insulting, because that essentially was far more than an oversight. It was outright plan, and that's how it was created, right?
That's right.
You know, they definitely, to your point in terms of statistics, and this particular author, he uses a lot of the argument about statistics that, you know, that you can't really get statistics, so it's a bit of a sham to incorporate this. And there were leagues that were brought in their own statistics, like the Federal League and the American Association, that were references that their statistics were brought in here, but the fact was that there wasn't a whole lot of formal statistics that were even taken or collected in the Negro League. You know, obviously this is kind of a sign of the times. You know, it's I think in some way politics. You know, this author is sort of banging the MLB for trying to make it like it's the same thing, and I think he seems to feel like, you know, the MLB can't do anything to correct that wrong.
That's right.
Nice, nice try for trying to do this, but
that's right. That's what he's
saying. He feels it probably should have been kept separate so that history doesn't get whitewashed, because that's one of his other comments, which I thought was really good, is that it makes it seem like the Negro League was sort of part of the MLB, and this is, you know, this was kind of in a quick overpass. This was part of MLB's history, but it really should stand out apart. It should be shown for people to see historically that this was not part of MLB, never wasn't intended to, and it was on purpose put apart, aside from MLB because of the racial component to it and the racial discrimination.
Very good.
So, it's one of these where you're damned if you do, you're damned if you don't, right? Like, it's a no-win situation. You can't apologize for – you can apologize for the wrong, but you're not going to change the impact that it had on many people's lives and the feeling that people have today. So it's a tricky situation, but I think the MLB kind of dropped the ball on making this, on how they incorporated this or what they were trying to do. It was probably handed to some low-level person, because that's how it seems to come across.
Yeah, no. This is, you made some great points there, brother. This is a fumble on their part. What's interesting is they it looked like they were going to pick up a fumble and score a touchdown on it. And I think even a non-critical, non-educated mind from the standpoint of understanding even the history would look at this and just go, this is how they're going to try to correct something? Like, they're going to correct their oversight? Folks, you're listening to Faith and Sport. I'm talking with this is Dr. John Aquaviva. We're talking with Carlos Herrera. And before we go,
just promoted Carlos to
that's
doctor.
That's right. I know. He deserves that, though.
He's I love a, it. He's Maybe a doctor. I'll be a PhD next week.
That's right. He's a doctor in all of our hearts. Carlos, before we go, one thing I wanted to mention was I thought it was interesting. I think it was something that we mentioned in the past 2 weeks. In fact, it was my miss a couple weeks ago, was the issue with Vanderbilt University and their football team and their kicker that they brought on because of COVID had hit all their kickers on the team. Sarah Fuller stepped in, was their kicker for the last couple games. And one of the things was this past weekend they were supposed to play Georgia. And it was the first cancellation of the 50-plus games that were canceled in Division I college football this fall, that in which they did not directly claim that – this is Vanderbilt again. They canceled the game, and they did not officially claim it had to do with COVID. It had to do with squad size and position availability. And what people have speculated, and it's some professionals as well as just fans and spectators speculated, was the – actual players on Vanderbilt's team were so frustrated by all of the press that came to Sarah Fuller for having one kick in one game and then two extra points in the other, and just kind of minimizing their efforts of the Vanderbilt team, that they refused to play in the game. There's so many that refused to play in the game against Georgia that they had to cancel. I found that interesting. Your last thought on that.
And to have a halftime speech.
She That's right.
kind of chastised the players.
That's right.
On her first game because they weren't given enough effort. Two things I wanted to close on.
Go ahead.
One of them is I did some research, and Advent, as I had mentioned earlier, being a good cradle Catholic.
That's right.
Advent ends on December 24th because Advent is when you prepare for the coming of the Lord. It's a preparation season, and that comes straight out of the youth. USCCB.org site, which is the United States Catholic Conference of Bishops.
That's
so
right.
If
I did.
You want great Catholic information, you can find it there.
That's right. Then, I did my research too.
The last thing I wanted to mention, and I think you should ask your next guest two questions for me.
That's here.
One of them is, would you ever have your team lose to get a better seat? Like, how do you see that? Has anybody ever approached you on that? Or ever done that or considered that? What do you think of that? So that's one question. The second question is, what do the girls, if he's had a chance to talk to them, think about the Sarah Fuller, because they are soccer players. And here's this goalie, female goalie, who has gotten so much press where some reporter says that she's taken the sports world by storm.
That's right.
Because of what she's done, which I thought was also ludicrous and extreme hyperbole from the reporter that wrote that.
No doubt. So, no doubt. Yeah, if we have time, I'm going to throw in that stuff. Well, listen, Carlos, thank you for joining us again here on Faith and Sport, brother. Listen, you have a good last week of Lent, and have a good Christmas, and we'll talk soon,
Advent.
Buddy.
Advent.
I said Lent. Advent. They just rhyme, brother. It's easy to get those confused.
Happy Advent and Merry Christmas to all of you, and thanks for having me on.
You got great it, buddy.
Job. And Happy New Year.
There you go. Carlos Herrera, folks, certified soccer coach up in the Northern Virginia area, as well as a former youth director. Chris, let's do this, man. We got weekend headlines. Let's do that. And then right after the weekend headlines, folks, stay through the break, and we have Anson Dorrance. He's a women's soccer coach at UNC, and he's done some pretty good things there, like winning 21 national titles.
That's a lot.
There you go. That's quite a bit. You need a calculator to add up all those victories. So let's do the music for the weekend headlines.
Spanning the globe to bring you the constant variety of sport, the thrill of victory, and the agony of defeat. The human drama of athletic competition.
It's time for Weekend Headlines on Faith and Sport with Dr. John Aquaviva.
Here's what's going on, folks. In NCAA men's basketball, men's play in their fourth week. The big upset over the weekend was Northwestern beating Michigan State. The top five teams as the rankings just came out are Gonzaga, followed by Baylor, Iowa, Michigan State, and Kansas. In the NHL, players in the league have announced a 56-game schedule. There will be a four just this year only divisions, including the seven Canadian teams being one of them. And division will play only until the playoffs. NCAA football, big game since it was conference championship weekend. The results of the games were as expected. As a result, the committee voted for the teams to play in the college football playoff. It'll be Alabama versus Notre Dame and Clemson versus Ohio State. And those two games are to be played on New Year's Day. So there you have it, sports headlines that may or may not change your life. Folks, stick around for Anson Dorrance. He's the women's soccer coach at UNC. This guy's won 21 of 37 possible titles for women's soccer at UNC Chapel Hill. He'll be right with us after the break, so stay with us here on Faith and Sport.
You are listening to Faith and Sport on the Carolina Catholic Radio Network, 1270 AM, Charlotte. Also streaming at CarolinaCatholicRadio.org and on the Carolina Catholic Radio app. We're also broadcasting across Radio Maria, so all of you stay with us. We've got more Faith and Sport coming up right after the break. And remember, if you want to hear more Faith and Sport, just check out CarolinaCatholicRadio.org on the on-demand section for the Faith and Sport Archive.
AM 1270 Catholic Radio Charlotte is a 100% listener-supported 501c3 nonprofit. Please donate, volunteer, and pray for us.
Hello, this is Steve Ray from CatholicConvert.com, and I'm really excited to invite you to join us for a virtual conference on the Bible for Catholics. We're going to have over 50 speakers. We have names already registered like Dr. Scott Hahn and Jeff Cavins, Dr. Peter Kreitz, and a whole bunch more. You won't believe the list. And our own Gail Buckley is going to be giving a talk on Bible study as well. It's going to be January 8th through 10, 2021. I'm going to have links and everything set up on my webpage for you to see. It's a free conference. You can hear all of those speakers that you want for those 3 days. So again, the title of it is Take and Read. That's a phrase from Augustine. Take and Read, A Journey into the Bible. And we invite you to join us again. Thank you. This is Steve Ray, and I'm looking forward to having you join us on the conference.
Hello, Carolina Catholic family. This is David Papandrea, founder and chairman of Carolina Catholic Radio. The new year has begun. Happy New Year. As we journey through Advent in preparation for the birth of our Lord, Savior, and King, Jesus Christ, I want to take a moment to extend my sincere thanks and gratitude to all who have helped grow our Carolina Catholic Apostolate over the past 5 years, from its inception in 2015 to incorporation in 2017 to our first broadcast in January 2019. I have truly been blessed with amazing volunteers,
a passionate advisory board, and supportive board of directors who share their time, talent, and treasure as we build Carolina Catholic's foundation for the future. I would also like to thank our dozens of donors, sponsors, and advertisers for your financial support. We look forward to sharing all the ways you can get involved with us to grow Carolina Catholic in these extraordinary times when our world turned upside down. Since Carolina Catholic signed on the air nearly 2 years ago, we have purchased AM 1270 radio in Belmont. We are increasing our power from 2,500 to 10,000 watts across Charlotte, and we are now operating on multiple platforms that include broadcast radio, Alexa and TuneIn, audio streaming on internet and our mobile app, social media posting on Facebook, a YouTube channel, an audio video on demand section on our website and mobile app, and direct marketing through our weekly e-blasts. In conjunction with EWTN's outstanding Catholic Network programs, Carolina Catholic has made a major commitment to local programming. We are now adding new local programs weekly based on the input we receive from you, our Carolina Catholics. Every day I hear from someone who wants to do a program about something that they're passionate about. Carolina Catholic was created for you, by you. It's a reflection of you. I look forward to talking with you about the goals of your parish, ministry, or business, and how to best promote it to the Carolina Catholic audience, now numbering in the thousands. Let's make 2021 a year to reignite our spirit and renew our commitment to learn, love, and live our Catholic faith across the Carolinas. Thank you for your prayers, your volunteering, and your financial support. May God bless you and your family abundantly this Advent and Christmas season.
Welcome back for more Faith and Sport on the Carolina Catholic Radio Network, 1270 AM Charlotte. We're also streaming at carolinacatholicradio.org and on the Carolina Catholic Radio app. And welcome back to our Radio Maria listeners. I'm Chris, the producer of the show. And now, once again, here he is, the host of Faith and Sport, the one, the only, the incomparable, Dr. John Acquaviva.
Thank you, Christopher. Folks, thank you for joining us here on the show today. If you just joined us, we had a hit-and-miss conversation with Carlos Herrera, as we do just about each and every week. So be sure to check out the show when it's replayed at least each day of the week, isn't it, Chris?
That's right.
Yeah, so they can catch it there.
And also on demand on CarolinaCatholicRadio.org.
I don't even know what really that means. It just sounds good every time people say it, on demand.
It means that Faith and Sport is on demand. People are demanding hearing more Faith and Sport.
There you go. Folks, in 1 minute, Anson Dorrance is going to join us. He is the women's soccer coach at UNC Chapel Hill. And if you want to read something impressive, read about this guy's record, and in particular, how many national championships this guy has won with the women's team there at UNC Chapel Hill. In fact, we make a big deal. We basically bow at the name of somebody like Nick Saban because he's won 5 national titles, right? And Anson Dorrance, I think you'd have to multiply it by at least 4 to get that in the same ballpark. So this guy is impressive, not only what he's done on the field, but what he does off the field in developing character and core values in the women there at UNC Chapel Hill. After the discussion with Anson, we're going to do our quick Q&A with Dr. A, and also we're going to do a little segment that I didn't mention earlier, Chris. We're going to do how Tom Brady once again broke the hearts of the Atlanta Falcons and their fans. It's just a little segment. We're just going to do it today. It's going to be fun. Not for an Atlanta Falcons fan, but it's going to be fun for everybody else listening. Folks, thank you for joining us here on Faith and Sport. We merge sport and virtue, and we just it's a sports show, as you can hear, but we just try to weave in character, morality, and ethics into our conversation. A perfect guy to talk about that is Anson Dorrance. He's on the line right now. Anson, welcome to the program, my friend.
John, thank you. I'm looking forward to chatting with you.
This is great. Okay, let's get right into this because I one of the things that we talk about here and one of the things that we try to do that virtually no other sports show does is just try to weave in constantly, character and ethics and so forth and just come at sport from a slightly different angle. Now, one of the things that you've developed there at UNC Chapel Hill women's soccer team are these list of core values. And these have been developed over the years in your couple decades as a college soccer coach and so forth. How do you instill these values into your players? Like, for instance, do not whine. Try to do something extraordinary every day. How do you try to get the gals there at the in your program to follow this?
Well, John, I'll be honest with you. I'm one of these guys who just loves to read everything under the sun. And while I was building my program, I was a huge fan of business books. And, of course, you read these business books, and they all tell you that if you want to have an incredible, I guess, mission, you've got to have a set of core values that everyone within your business or in my situation team lives. And so I had all these insipid statements about, you know, the way we were going to run our team, and nothing really made any difference. And all of a sudden, I'm reading a New York Times magazine about this Russian exile poet by the name of Joseph Brodsky that's hired to go into Colombia to teach.
Sure.
And a woman studying for a PhD meets Dr. Brodsky, and they start talking about he wants all of his PhD candidates and master's candidates to memorize ream literature. And she gets together with her fellow students and says, this is ridiculous. I don't think this guy understands where he is.
Sure.
He's at one of the elite universities in the world, and we don't want to memorize stuff like an elementary school child. We are Columbia graduate students, and they all go storming back into his office and tell him, this is ridiculous. We're not going to memorize anything. And he basically says, well, if you don't, none of you guys get your PhDs and master's degrees. And so, of course, they get to work.
Yeah.
She is writing this article basically saying that all of a sudden, by memorizing all of this literature, it completely changed her impression of Russia. It became a part of her conversation. It became a part of her cerebral fabric. And she said she was elevated and transformed.
So
what I did is I took all these insipid statements I had made about the culture I wanted to create. You know, we work hard or we don't whine.
Right.
And I found all these motivational quotes that we attached to each statement. The players had to memorize these statements. They had to sort of recite them publicly, which we do as sort of a game in the preseason. And, of course, it's laced with humor. And then we expect the kids to live them because twice a year, their teammates in a peer evaluation evaluate every kid on the roster against the 13 core values. And I'll tell you, it transformed my culture.
Now, let me ask this, Coach Anson. If somebody whines, right? Number one is we don't whine. If somebody whines, what are the consequences?
Well, they've got to recite the quote publicly. The joy, the true joy in life is to be a force of fortune instead of a feverish, selfish little cloud of ailments and grievances complaining that the world will not devote itself to making you happy. And basically, every single statement we make has a motivational quote attached to it. And you're expected to live them.
There you go.
And if you don't live them in the peer evaluations, we basically try to get rid of the kids that don't live them. If they're on scholarship, we try to get them to transfer. And if they're not on scholarship, we try to convince them to quit.
Interesting.
So we take this very seriously.
You sure do. Folks, you're listening to Faith and Sport here on Carolina Catholic Radio, also a co-production of Radio Maria. This is Dr. John Acquaviva. Our guest today is Anson Dorrance. He's the women's soccer coach at UNC. Now, Coach, before we continue, clarify the following. Do you have 21 national titles or 22? I'm a little confused by what's on the internet.
Yeah, no, we have 22.
Okay.
The NCAA only sponsored 21 of them. Back in the old days, as anyone as old as I am can remember that's been involved in women's sports, the NCAA did not sponsor women's championships.
So who sponsored it? Like Ovaltine?
Say that again?
I said, who sponsored the other one? Ovaltine?
Well, it was actually sponsored by the Association of Intercollegiate Athletics for Women, the AIAW.
Got it.
So the AIAW was the group that sponsored women's championships for the NCAA in a hostile takeover in 1982, basically took over all of the women's national championships in all sports. And we had basically only been involved in the AIAW for 1 year.
There you go.
In 1981, before the NCAA took over. So It's 21 NCAA championships, but it's 22 national championships.
There you go. It's clarified there, folks. Anson, let's switch gears here a little bit. If you could go back to your first, what was the very first year you were a head coach of a soccer program at Division I level? What year was that?
It was 1977. I was coaching the men at North Carolina.
Got it. So if you could go back, the current Anson Dorrance, everything you've learned, everything you've gained, all your experience and so forth, and go back and tell you had 5 minutes with the young Anson Dorrance, the coach, first-year coach at UNC men's team, what would you tell him? What's one thing you would tell him?
I wouldn't tell him anything. I would not tell him a thing.
Come on.
It's really interesting.
Why?
People think that you do someone a favor by, you know, you go back and you tell your younger self something.
Yeah.
Maybe if you don't like yourself, you can go back and tell that younger self something. But if you're satisfied with everything it's achieved, you don't want to change anything. I want that guy to suffer. I want him to make mistakes. I want him to fail. I want him to learn through failure. I want him to basically evolve and grow because he didn't succeed in something. So I'm not going to give him a thing. I want him to absolutely suffer every day of his life until he figures things out, because that's the fastest way to grow. So I don't want that guy to skip any stages in his growth. I want him to absolutely suffer for every mistake he made. Makes and then obviously correct it, because the evolution of what we've done here at UNC is we've corrected mistakes. And I think anyone that really thought about it, they wouldn't want to change too much or really wouldn't want to give too much advice, because honestly, your best lessons are learned when it's painful.
That's a good point. That's a good point, brother. But if I could go back and talk to myself 30 years ago, I would definitely say put a lot of money in Facebook when it comes out. But I know that wasn't the avenue in which we were going down. Let me ask you this about these core values. There's 13 of them, or 12 of them, right? Or 13?
Actually, we've got we're up to 13 now.
So at any point, you can add a 14th one or a 15th one if it just so moves you. Because this is just your list,
correct,
right?
Because in 2018, 2019, my leadership council felt we needed a new one. And so we added... accountable, and it was a fabulous addition. So from our perspective, that group decided we had to hold people accountable, and I love the accountable quote, because it talks about failure in that one too.
Oh, I love it.
Because accountability is the biggest challenge for the millennials. They're escaping the protections of loving parents. They don't want their kids to get hurt.
That's right.
And now they have 4 years to get ready for the chaos of the universe. So this accountable core value was a critical addition.
All right, let's switch gears again, because I really like your input on this, and I think our listeners would like input on this. I think there's a lot of parents out there, there's a lot of grandparents out there of athletes, and one of the major issues, as you know, it's not void at, or it's not sidestepped at places like UNC women's soccer. It's all over the world in the world of sport, and that is playing time. What is your basic or even specific suggestion that you could make to a parent or grandparent when they are looking at their child or their grandchild and they're not playing enough, at least in their eyes? What is the best way to handle that? Now, this goes everything from youth soccer to youth baseball up until through college and even the pros. If you're not playing enough, though, as a youth athlete, what is your suggestion for the situation, either the parent or the athlete themselves?
Well, honestly, we talk about that regularly. In fact, I could actually pull out one of our core values that addresses it directly, because this is something that is a critical part of athletics. I mean, there's always this fight, you know, for playing time. And here it is. It's basically our ninth core value. It's about being noble.
Mm-hmm.
And here it is. I'll just read it to you.
Let's hear it.
If we don't play as much as we would like, we are noble and still support the team and its mission. This remarkably noble, self-sacrificing, generous human being always places the team before self. And the quote we've suggested is the quote from Viktor Frankl's Man's Search for Meaning. And it's an absolutely brilliant quote. If there is a meaning in life at all, then there must be a meaning in suffering. Suffering is an eradicable part of life, even as fate and death.
That's right.
Without suffering and death, human life cannot be complete. The way in which a man accepts his fate and all the suffering it entails, the way in which, and this is perfect for a Catholic radio station.
That's right.
The way in which he takes up his cross gives him ample opportunity, even under the most difficult circumstances, to add a deeper meaning to his life. It may remain brave, dignified, and unselfish. Or in a bitter fight for self-preservation, he may forget his human dignity and become no more than an animal. Here lies the chance for a man either to make use of or to forego the opportunities of attaining the moral values that a difficult situation may afford him. And this decides whether he is worthy of his sufferings or not. So if you're not playing, this is it.
Yeah.
It's your chance to basically demonstrate that you're noble and self-sacrificing. And basically what any coach will tell every player in his roster, certainly at a collegiate level,
yeah,
the reason we recruited you is you can play. And
that's
you
right.
are responsible for your own playing time. Now, obviously, what a parent and a player tries to do is they try to make it seem like you are responsible for their playing
that's
time.
That's right.
But the coach is not. Everything comes down to performance, preparation, commitment, competitive fire, and all these different elements.
That's right.
So basically, if you want to play, it's up to you.
Very good. And the last thing I would say, and I know that you have some on your roster now and certainly throughout the years, that is, if they are Catholic, after you read them that or after they've memorized that, say, and now as a way to meditate on what you've just read about not playing, say a decade of the rosary, and you'll get even greater insight into these words. I love that, Coach. That there's so many things within that. In fact, one of the things I noticed about that particular value is that it contains the largest quote. And I love it because, in a way, you could live by this alone. In other words, it could stand by itself alone, but these other 12 also have value as well. Folks, we're talking to Anson Dorrance. He's the women's soccer coach at UNC Chapel Hill, the winner of 22 national titles. Coach, what is something that you would leave our audience with as just in general about what you look for in a gal when you go recruit them? What's one of the things that's maybe not discussed in these values that you look for in a player athlete or a student athlete?
What I'm looking for is someone with the potential for personal growth on the field, off the field, et cetera. And we actually discuss this in our player conferences. We have 9 different qualities that are critical for your evolution as a human being, certainly in athletics.
Yeah.
And in my sports, here are the 9 that we pick. We look for someone with self-discipline, competitive fire,
yep,
self-belief, love of the ball, love of playing the game, love of watching the game, grit, coachability, and what we call connection.
Yeah.
And connection is how you answer this question.
Let's hear it.
Do you love your teammates, and do they love you? So those 9 qualities, every kid on the roster 3 times a year in an extended player conference basically evaluates themselves on a 5-point scale, because what that'll do is that'll project whether or not they will ever play at any level. And basically, they get to select how they evaluate themselves in those areas. And here's, John, what is really cool about those 9 areas. Those aren't, genetic qualities you're born with. Those are choices you make when you wake up in the morning.
That's right.
So those 9 qualities are choices you make every single day. And if you aggressively choose those 9 qualities, you're going to go through the roof in your sport. But also, honestly, in your life.
Absolutely. Coach, this is going to be something I'm going to point a lot of our parents and grandparents to. If they don't catch this, we have this on, a recording of this show on our website, and I'm going to point a lot of people to this particular conversation. I can't think of a more enriching 12 or 13 minutes. I thank you your efforts to make the world of collegiate sport a better experience for people. I thank you for coming on the show, and listen, have a good Christmas and a good new year.
Well, John, thank you. I thoroughly enjoyed it.
I appreciate it, Anson. Take care.
Thank you.
Well, there you go, folks. Anson Dorrance. Is this guy great or what?
Yeah.
No wonder why he's won 22 national titles. All those core values and these 9 characteristics that he expects of his players. man, the world would be a better place if more people kind of instilled that in place of business and teams and families and so forth.
Yeah.
Holy smokes. I wonder why that guy's successful. Well, there you go, folks. Our guest of the week, Anson Dorrance, 22 national titles in basically 37 years.
Wow.
I know. And I asked him in the preparation of this conversation before the weekend, I said, Anson, just to put it in perspective, you've won 22 times. What is the team and how many victories, how many national titles do they have that's closest to these 22 victories? It was Notre Dame with 3.
Wow.
Isn't that crazy?
All I got to say is, we're not worthy. We're not worthy.
There you go. Folks, we only have a couple minutes left here on Faith and Sport, but I promised you two things. The quick Q&A with Dr. A, and I said, how Tom Brady once again broke the hearts of Atlanta Falcons fans and the team. So we'll get to both things, and actually both have to do with Tom Brady.
Yeah, with Tom Brady.
Let's do the quick Q&A with Dr. A first, and then we'll move on to the second part.
The Tampa Bay Bucs are headed to the playoffs, and the New England Patriots are out. Does this mean that Bill Belichick is nothing without Tom Brady?
Well, not necessarily, but the reason that I asked this question and the reason it's worth discussing is this. A couple years ago, in Sports Illustrated, they literally did, it was about a 10-page article, which is rare for any sports magazine, in fact, any news magazine, to do anything more than a couple pages on a current topic. And what this particular story was on, it was about 2 years ago, and the question was asked, is at the core of the success for the New England Patriots, Tom Brady, or is it Bill Belichick, right?
Right.
That was the question. And rather than them trying to answer the question themselves, these writers, what they did is they asked current players in the NFL, current players with the New England Patriots, former coaches, current coaches that coached with or alongside Bill Belichick, and so forth. And you know what the overwhelming outcome was? That between the two of them, which one had the greater impact? Overwhelmingly, it was Bill Belichick.
Wow.
Yeah, and despite your question, which was, in other words, Tom Brady leaves and he heads to the Tampa Bay Bucs. They're headed to the playoffs. And for the first time in a long time, the New England Patriots are not headed to the playoffs.
I know.
But 1 year doesn't necessarily, claim everything. Nope. But it is something interesting to look at.
I know there's probably a lot of fans up there saying, man, if Cam Newton doesn't improve, we're sending him back to Carolina.
No, I know, and Carolina doesn't really want him. He really dresses, for the most part, really well, and he's an interesting dresser, but I think his best days are not just behind him, but they're long behind him.
Maybe if football doesn't work out, he can go into his own clothing line.
I think he would love that idea. But you know what? The one thing I appreciate about Cam Newton is when he's in a commercial, he delivers.
Yeah.
He's really good in commercials. Like,
yeah.
I love that one where the kid wanted to take his position. He was just like an 8-year-old kid. And he goes, well, I want to be, I want to take your position on the Carolina Panthers. And he was like, well, I don't know if I can let that happen. He was like, kid, you can be anything you want. Right. He was trying to instill he's trying to instill confidence and hope in this kid. And then the kid just ends up going, well, I want to take your job with the Carolina Panthers. At the time, he was, of course, playing for the Panthers. And he was like, well, I don't know if I'd go that far. It was really good.
Right.
He delivered. I think
Speaking of the Panthers, the Washington football team will be taking on the Panthers this coming Sunday, so that's going to be an interesting game to see. And even though the Panthers are the hometown team here, I'm still going to have to pull for my Washington football team.
You got it, brother. Every time, man. Every time. Well, listen, the other thing that I mentioned that has to do with Tom Brady is how Tom Brady once again broke the hearts of the Atlanta Falcons and their fans. Get this, folks. Okay, let's go back a couple years. In the Super Bowl, where Tom Brady's New England Patriots were playing against the Atlanta Falcons in the Super Bowl, they're down. The Patriots were 28-3. Everybody's like, sweet. Everybody started celebrating that they're Atlanta Falcons. Not only did Tom Brady lead them on a comeback, they end up tying the game, sent it to overtime, and won in overtime.
Wow.
This past weekend, the Atlanta Falcons were up 17-0 over Tom Brady's Tampa Bay Bucs, and they came back. The Bucs came back and beat him.
Wow.
Oh, man, can you imagine how much love there is for Tom Brady in Atlanta?
Yeah.
Holy smokes. They're like, I hope this guy, he better not play until he's 50 or he's going to cause a lot more heartache.
No, and like I was telling you before the show, I read where some of the people were saying, the fans were saying that the officials were even trying to give Atlanta a first down by moving the football across the line.
In other words, even the officials couldn't help Atlanta win.
Right.
I'm telling you, if a quarterback for the Atlanta Falcons, Matt Ryan, never sees Tom Brady again, in or out of a football stadium, I think he'll die a happy man. That was brutal. All right, folks, as we do just about every week, we end with a quote from a Pope on sport. So let's do that again. This comes from Pope John Paul II, in which he said, "Give thanks to God for the gift of sport in which the human person exercises his body, intellect, and will, recognizing these abilities as so many gifts of his creator." Again, that comes from Pope John Paul II. And before we go, I want to give a special thank you to both people that joined us on the show today, Carlos Herrera, as well as coach of the Carolina, that's right, of the Carolina Tar Heels women's soccer team, Anson Dorrance. Thank you both for joining me on the show today. I'm Dr. John Aquaviva. Please join us next time here on Carolina Catholic Radio and Radio Maria for more faith in sport.
And one more thing we want to mention. Tomorrow night, one of the biggest rivalries in college basketball, the Wolfpack takes on the Tar Heels. And in case my hat doesn't give it away, John, you know who I'll be pulling for? The Pack.
Your hat gives it away, brother.
You've been listening to Faith and Sport on the Carolina Catholic Radio Network and also Radio Maria. I want to thank you all for tuning in today, and make sure to tune in again for more Faith and Sport next week. And in the meantime, if you want to find more Faith and Sport, check out CarolinaCatholicRadio.org and listen to Faith and Sport on demand from the Faith and Sport Archive.
Catch the spirit. Learn, love, and live your faith. AM 1270, Catholic Radio, WCGC, Belmont, where Charlotte grows in Christ. Flagship station of the Carolina Catholic Radio Network.